Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find three separate speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Laura.
Hi, I'm Laura. I'm a recovering compulsive overeater and anorexic. Hi, everyone. Lisa Ann, thank you so much for asking me. Which you could feel my heart beating out of my chest right now. I want to welcome the newcomers. This program is amazing. Monica, congratulations on 6 months. And I want to give a shout out to all the people listening. This particular meeting and podcast has totally saved my life a million times over. And a shout out to the gratitude list that I've been on for 4 years. Those women have saved my life as well. So I have 5 years and 20 days today, and that is a complete miracle. Did I already thank you, Lisa Ann? Am I that nervous? Okay. I didn't think that I was going to get this. I just thought I was, like, terminally unique. And I told my I have not been that anxious about leaving here. And then today, I just got really nervous. And I had to check in about that. And, like, my disease just, like, wants, I just want everyone to love me. You know, like, I want everyone to think, like, I'm, like, the greatest thing that's ever happened on this earth. And that's the truth. And I just get to, like, keep showing up and know that, like, maybe people think that and maybe people don't, but I don't have to change me in order for that to be true, you know? So I just love that I can say that today. Okay, so what it was like. I think I was born a compulsive overeater, for sure. That's just, and anyone listening, anyone in the room, that's just how this works for me. This is my story. It's my opinion. So I think I was born a compulsive overeater, though I have no proof. And this, you know, disease starts in my head. And the reason I know that is because I was very, very obsessed with, the food didn't manifest until I was about 12, 13, but I was completely obsessed with your body and my body and what you thought about my body and what I thought about your body. And I hate saying this, but it's my truth, and if anyone relates to it, like, I have to carry the message that I was really ashamed of my mom being overweight. I thought I was, like, less than because my mom was overweight, and I was really embarrassed when she would come to pick me up anywhere, and I just thought, like, oh my God, I'm never going to make it in this world because my mom's overweight, you know? And I thought I was going to go to hell. Like, I literally would, like, pray to God that this would not happen, and I just... So that's that reminder of, like, this happens in my head. And my best friend Mary had a little belly, and I didn't have a belly, and we were always in dance class, and I thought, like, I am so much better than you because I have a flat stomach. And we would, like, stand in the mirrors, and I would think that. Like, literally, like, I have no pictures of this. You know, like, these are all, like, my little thoughts and my memories. And I just, you know, I really just thought I was better than you if I was thinner than you. And my mom, okay, so we have this, this like steep hill in the back of our yard, and I have two older sisters and a little brother, and when it would rain, my mom would give us little pan pies, and we would, go outside, and she'd say, like, go make mud pies, and so we'd make mud pies, but I thought they looked like chocolate pies, and so I would always try to eat the mud, and my mom would, like, constantly have to, like, pull me away from the mud pie to let me know, like, it's not chocolate, you know, but it's what it looked like to me, you know, and, like, again, like, there's no photos of this, like, these are, like, it's like, oh my God, like, it starts right here, like, I have a problem up here, and so I just kept doing that, you know, like, that's what worked for me. Those thoughts, and I was just really uncomfortable, you know, it's like, that's what the big book says, like, restless, irritable, and discontent, like, that was me, but I definitely, like, tried to put on the smile, tried to put on the happy face, and I am, like, generally, like, a really happy person, like, I got, like, the happy gene, like, I'm pretty happy, but it was also always like fighting that as well, you know. And so I also thought it'd be smart to have a coffee before this, and that did not help. That's probably what a lot of that is. It was decaf, but still. Anyway, so I started picking up the food, and I'll just say this, that nothing that happened to me is why I'm a compulsive overeater, my opinion. It's just that, like, I picked up the food. When I was 13, I was sexually assaulted from my sister's boyfriend, her older boyfriend. And I spoke up for myself for the first time. You know, I said, stop. I don't want you to do that. Stop. And he didn't listen. And I just was like, okay, that's my ticket to, you know, I'm being shut off from the rest of the world. And, like, I ran with that. And it worked for me. Like, I just used that as my excuse for a long, long time. And I was just really uncomfortable and, like, shut down. And I decided that, you know, it was my fault, of course. And that's what happens to, you know, girls who, I don't know what I thought, but my mom also always told me that, she told me when I was really little that if you're beautiful, it's a blessing and a curse, and I heard you're cursed, and that it was a bad thing, and that was right around the time that I was assaulted, and so I just thought, I asked for it, you know, I brought it on, and that's why I really remember picking up the food. I just thought, like, this is going to cure everything, and it really did, and you know, so much of it was like a blackout. Like, I have, like, sharp memories about certain things, and then I just don't remember, like, chunks of my life because I was in the food. And I went through, high school and, abused diet pills. I abused laxatives. I got to a point where, and I wasn't, like, a successful dieter. Like, I don't, you know, I was not. Like, I think 2 weeks was the longest I'd ever gone on a diet, and I was, like, had lost some weight. But it was about 3 days. I just knew, like, I just flunk at them. Like, I just can't go on a diet. I'm not good at it. I don't have willpower when it comes to that. I just wanted to eat compulsively. And I got up to 222, and I forgot to say that. So 222 is my top weight, and I'm 162 right now. So it's about 60 pounds. And I was, you know, I've been in a normal weight, an average weight, for about 3 years, 3.5 years. I had come in bigger and lost weight, as a result of these steps. But I definitely had to release, like, the head obsession first. So, in high school, my friend told me, we were going to church camp, and she said, I really want to lose weight for church camp. And I said, yeah, me too. I bet I'm a horrible dieter. And she said, let's just stop eating. And I said, that is a great idea. I have never thought about that one. And I stopped eating for 9 weeks. Like, I was like, I'll do it. You know, like, I'll either, like, binge my brains out, or I will completely starve myself. Like, that's me. And so I did, and I just became a liar. I mean, I'd already been a liar, but, like, I was really good at lying, and I just thought I was a horrible person. Like, I just didn't understand, like, what was wrong with me. Like, shouldn't I have been better than this? You know, like, didn't God want something more than me? Because I did grow up in church. And so I stopped eating for 9 weeks, and that was just rough. I ate, like, three to four, like, raisins a week. I mean, I was just lying to everyone. I was 15. My mom would pick me up from work, and I worked at a restaurant, of course. And she said, did you eat lunch? And I said, yeah, absolutely. They fed me for free. And then she would take me to the gym, and I would work out. And my sister taught me, maybe she's one of us, I don't know. Maybe that's not kind of me to say. She taught me to saran wrap my waist. I was like, this is a brilliant idea. Like, every bad idea I thought was a brilliant idea. Like, that is how I know, like, I am a compulsive overeater. Like, you tell me a really bad idea, and my head thinks that is great. Like, this is good information. I'm going to try this. And I tried everything, and I idolized my sisters. Like, they were beautiful and thin and so popular, and I was so uncomfortable in my skin. I mean, I want to be like, I cannot tell you enough. But it's like, you guys get it. You know, like, I don't have to say that in this room. And I wore 4 different outfits my entire sophomore year of high school, like, literally. And when I came into the rooms, I would have a panic attack if I had to wear a short sleeve shirt. Like, I wore long sleeves, covered my body, you better stay away. But please think I'm the best thing ever, you know, but, like, please stay away, you know. You better want to have sex with me, but please stay away, don't talk to me, you know, just like that torturous head. And so, anyway, my sisters were just amazing, and I was really overweight, and I just, so I had lost a bunch of weight and then got a lot of attention, and I just thought, you people are awful, like, I can't believe, you know, like, and it was like, oh, I've proven myself right, you know, this is what happens, like, you're thinner, and then, you get attention. So, you know, I can, like, bore you with all the stories, and it went back and back and forth. Like, I went to college, got, you know, out of town, I'm from Nashville. Never felt like I belonged, and gratefully in this program, I have done many inventories, and, like, I don't hate my town anymore. Like, in the beginning, like, I heard take what you want and leave the rest, and I applied that to, like, my hometown. I hated it. It represented everything I didn't want to be, and now I love Nashville, and, like, I travel for work, and I'm so happy to go back. So, that's a miracle, this program. I went off to college and got out of town and packed on, like, 40 more pounds. And what happened was I got severely sick in my freshman year of college. I got rheumatoid arthritis, and I thought, I just can't handle college. Like, I didn't know what had happened. I really, like, did, like, go from, like, fully capable to, like, handicap. And I didn't know what had happened. I just thought, like, I wasn't cut for college. And so that was the beginning of this journey in eventually into Overeaters Anonymous. And I had to move back home and let my family take care of me because I had gotten so sick. And let me tell you, when you cannot make your own food and you're a compulsive overeater, like, it was torturous. I had to rely on other people, and I couldn't just go and, like, get my food when I wanted, because I won't go into details, but, like, you know, handicapped, like, I just couldn't do anything. Very incapable. So, it was just this torturous hell, and, but what ended up happening was, I stayed at home for about 9 months, and my family took care of me, and then, I moved to Los Angeles 7 years ago in 2006, and I went to college, and when I got here, I was flunking out of college. I'll get there, but anyway, I met with a nutritionist for my ailments, and she told me to go on a diet, and I was like, okay, great, I'm in so much pain, I can't move, I'm willing to do whatever you say, and I did it. I lost about 75 pounds in 4 months, and that is a drastic amount of weight to lose in that amount of time. That was gross. I was hopeless, you know, and I want to say that at my lowest weight, which was at that point, I've never been more miserable in my life. And I came to Overeaters Anonymous to relieve the insanity in my head, because I just couldn't do it anymore. I was terrified for my life. So, I lost all the weight, and then, of course, gained, like, half of it back. And when I was gaining half of it back, my friend told me about OA. And I so kindly told her, you should totally go to that. Your portions are out of control. Like, go to that, you know. And she was, you know, thank you. Then 6 months later, she retold me about it, and, like, this bomb went off, and I was mortified and yet felt so home at the same time. And that was over Christmas break, and I was visiting family, and we went to a bookstore and bought a book about OA. I had a boyfriend at the time, and I kept hiding it from him, and he was like, he wasn't, like, going through my suitcase, but I just remember, like, hiding it, like, every second. Like, he cannot know. Like, had he not already known, you know, what I was doing with food. But it was, you know, the gateway into here. And I came because I was 21, Like I said, I was flunking out of college. I was binging until 5 in the morning at every fast food restaurant. I said in my first step, like, if I don't work the 12 steps, I will die at a fast food restaurant. Like, I just will. You know, giving you my money, like, heart attack, whatever. I don't know, but I'll die. And I came here, and I sat next to somebody. I always cry when I say this. I sat next to somebody who was 523 pounds. And there was also someone in the corner who was suffering from bulimia. And I saw both of them, and I was like, oh, my God, that's me. Like, how can that be? Like, you know, I get both ends of it. You know, I get that head. And they were reading from Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I heard the word alcohol, and I looked at him, and I was like, is this AA? And he goes, no, it's OA. And I was like, you know, like, I couldn't walk out. I could not have gone to the wrong meeting. You know, like, that. I was mortified. And just he just looked at me, and he said, no, it's OA. And I just said, okay, thank you. And, like, I'll never forget the look he gave me, ever. And I came for 4 months, and I binged my brains out. I was not ready to let the food go at all. So if you're new and you're not willing to let your food go, and for me it was like my best friend, my lover, my everything, like, it's okay, you know? Pray for the willingness, pray for the desperation. And 4 months in, I got it, because everything was spiraling out of control, like, everything. My roommate started catching me, like, on binges at 3 in the morning. She would wake up, and I wouldn't be home, and she would call me. And I'm like, how dare you? And she'd say, where are you? And I said, I'm getting water. Well, then I had to go get water, and I was so upset. And I'd come in, and she'd just wait for me. And it's like, I just put people through torture, and I really thought I was affecting no one. And I just was lashing out, and nothing in my life looked good. And so I got abstinent, and my sponsor asked me, what can you not do and be a working civilian in this world? And I said, I can't binge, I can't eat pizza, I cannot eat sourdough bread, and a couple other things. And I put those things down. So I have not binged, I have not eaten pizza, so I have two behaviors on my abstinence. I don't go from place to place to, like, get anything. Like, even today, like, a couple days ago, I was at a store, and I wanted, like, I think I was looking for, like a protein bar or something. And they didn't have it, but I don't get to go to the next one, because if the next place doesn't have it, I'm going to the third place. And that's what I did. I went to, like, I think 12 places was, like, my max. And I lived in Hollywood, and I had the entire, like, Hollywood to Burbank to North Hollywood, like, the entire, like, city mapped out on my binge route. I mean, that's a headache even to think about. And to be doing that, I mean, that's, like, what brought me here. God bless you. And so I got abstinent, and I never failed another class again, and, like, that was a miracle, and graduated college, I think, 18 months later. I didn't think that was possible. I failed math 7 times. I'm just not good at math, but literally, like, I got abstinent, and, you know, I put the food down and picked life up. Like, it's just that simple. It's not easy. I got a sponsor who, She was everything I wanted to be that I didn't know how to achieve. You know, she was adorable and quirky and fun and pretty and, like, so nice to everyone. And I just thought, you're the worst person ever. And I sat next to her in a meeting, and I said that I needed a sponsor. And she said, she came up to me, and I didn't want to talk to her. I was, like, about to leave the meeting. And she's like, oh, my God, I'll sponsor you. And I was like, oh, hey, thank you. And I called her a few days later and worked with her for 2.5 years, and she heard 4 and 5. And she drastically changed my life because I followed her direction, and I really let her in. You know, like, that's the key for me, is, like, letting people in and letting them see me. So I guess I am talking about what it's like now. And what it's like now is really, really good. You know, I've gotten to step 9. I'm in the middle of step 9. I did, I had to go back to 1, 2, and 3 last year. My food got a little messy, and my sponsor said, "You are not on 8. Go back to 1, 2, and 3. And I thought, okay. And I was really upset, but so I'm just willing to take her direction because she knows what's best for me. You know, I believe that. And I hope everyone has a sponsor who, like, you believe they have your best interest at hand. And my sponsor absolutely has my best interest at hand, no matter what. And I thought I would do that in, like, 2 months, and it took me a year. And I was where I was, you know. And so now I'm back, and I'm on step 9. And I want to talk about this. I got a tax return. I filed my taxes and got a tax return last week. And I literally never thought about my financial amends, not once. And I was on the way to the bank to open a savings account for this money, and because I was planning to go to Paris and London this fall with my sister. I'm grateful because of OA. I'm in a new fellowship too, and so both of my sponsors, without knowing each other, ever talking to each other, brought up on the same day, like, you have financial amends to make. You're not going to Paris and London. Like, you're using that money. And they were really kind and loving. And both of my sponsors just said, "Do you want freedom?" And I said, "Absolutely." You know. And I made a financial amends like that same day. A girl texted me who I owed $422 to. We never impromptuly ever get like any. We never hang out like, you know, on the whim. She texted me that morning and asked if I wanted to have lunch with her. And I went and I showed up, you know, and I apologized for, you know, not keeping my commitment and paying her back that she so kindly gave me 4 years ago. And she's one of my best friends, and I got to make a commitment, you know, I got to apologize for avoiding her on and off, subconsciously or not, for 4 years, because I owed you this money that was never mine to begin with, you know. And I literally, for every... I have exactly the amount of money from that tax return that I owe back to people. And that's God. Like, okay, I have $78 left, I think, per my sponsor, she thinks. And I turned that over to her. Like, I gave it to them, and I told them, this is what I have. And they said, okay, here we go, dish it out, go do your amends. Because it's just not my money to begin with. And I want freedom. So... I sponsor women. I heard a really great speaker one time say that she doesn't, and this is just my opinion and hers, that she doesn't believe in saying that she's a full sponsor because, like, I have to be willing to, like, give back what I have. And sometimes I have a lot of sponsees, but, like, they come and go, you know, sometimes. And I have a lot of women that I sponsor right now, and I love every single one of them. And I take them through the steps, you know, like the way I was taken through. And because it took me 4 months to get abstinent, I have to give them that dignity of choice as well to know that, like, they might not get abstinent right away. And I'm not a bad sponsor because of that. You know, it's just where they are right now. And what else do I do? I'm of service, like, every opportunity I can because left to my own devices, it's just terrible. Like, I don't want to be in my own head. And this morning, like, I've had, you know, a really good week, good work, good life, good program. And then this morning, you know, like, I wake up pretty happy usually. And I'm in a situation that I've never been in. Like, it sounds so stupid, but, like, resentment is the number one killer. I have a housemate and her dog, literally hates everyone but her. And I get barked at and, like, all the time. And I woke up and I was, like, it terrified me. Like, the anxiety that comes over me. And my sponsor reminded me, like, you're not binging. You're dealing with this and you have this dog that you really hate. And that's really uncomfortable for you because you hate anger and you're uncomfortable. And I'm not binging and I'm not, you know, doing anything else destructive. And the list goes on with that, you know. So I'm really grateful that I can turn that over, you know, and, like, I can be in a meeting and, like, the answer is here, you know. I'm sure I could say more, but I just feel, like, really, I feel at peace. So I'm going to end early, and I'm really grateful that that's just a feeling that I get today because of, you know, these rooms. So I'll open it up for questions if anyone has any. So thank you for letting me share. On that note, does anyone have any questions? Okay, so what do I do on a daily basis for my spiritual program? I heard a great speaker recently. He says three things. Surprise me, God. Lead me where you need me. And thank you, Father. And I say that every day since I heard that, morning and night, on my knees. I read pages 83 to 88 on my knees from the big book. And then I've recently started meditating for 2 minutes afterwards. And, like, I want to go to five, you know, but it's like, let's just do two. You know, like, let's not jump ahead. I answer sponsees' calls. And sometimes I feel like I have nothing to say. And guess what? It's not about me. You know, like, how about listen to them? I call my sponsor. I send my food in every day. I send in multiple gratitude lists. And like I said, for me, like, being of service gets me out of my head, whatever it looks like. Sometimes it's just looking like the barista in the eye at the coffee shop and saying, like, how are you? You know, opening a door for somebody, like, that's being of service. Like, and it's selfish, but, like, anything I can do to just get out of here. But really, those pages, you know, right-sized me, and just saying those three things and then praying for others and not praying for myself all the time. Thanks. Yeah, it's a bunch of women in OA, and someone started it about 4 years. Oh, I didn't. The question was the gratitude list I mentioned and how does it work. It's a OA gratitude list that someone started about 4 years ago, and it's just it's an email group. We just all send in our gratitude throughout the day and then have phone meetings twice a week. So if you'd like to talk to me after the meeting, I'd be happy to do that with you. My sisters, how's the relationship today? It's really good. My sister, one of them, the one who's right above me, I had a lot of damage. I played the victim a lot in that relationship, and I didn't realize it. I thought she was the problem. And I got to make amends to her 2 weeks ago. And, I just got to apologize for everything I've done and not done, you know? And some of the things were so silly. Like, things I did when I was little, but I carried them. Like, I literally stabbed her with a pencil when I was 10 years old, and I wouldn't let that go. And when I was making the amends to her, she, like, showed me the pencil mark. Like, it's still there. Okay? The lead is still there. And I got to apologize for, you know, everything. But it's not, you know, what my sponsor is, like, we would talk about is it's not like, I'm sorry I did that. It's like, what have I done after the amends? I have kept in contact with her. I've texted her and I've called her multiple times because I apologize for, like, not working on a relationship for years, and now I'm working on a relationship. And then the other sister, the older one, I've always been really, really close with her. And, hers is like a general amends, because it's just a really different relationship. And I get to love them where they are, and not figure out who they are, what they are, and really, like, let them be. And that is really hard for me sometimes because I want to fix them. But today it's really good because of the steps. Thank you for that question. So the question is, how is the mental obsession of being thin removed? That's a really good question, and it's just a daily reprieve. Like, I know that sounds like, ugh, a daily reprieve, really? But, I mean, that's all I get. And I've just learned that. Today I was trying on dresses at a store, and I can go in, like, any store now and, like, not cry and, like, clothes fit. But today they didn't. And I, like, walked out of a dressing room, like, not in tears. And I don't forget that. Like, I thought about that. Like, I'm not crying right now or hating the world or, like, planning, like, where to go eat. So I don't know. It's not always removed. There are days that I would love to be thinner. I would love to have more muscle. I would love, you know, X, Y, and Z. But what I have learned, and having arthritis has really helped this, is that my body is so much more than what it looks like. Like, that is the emphasis. And if I can remember that, like, I couldn't, you know, get out of bed a long time ago. And I, like, walked out of bed easy this morning, you know? So, like, my self-worth just can't be in my own body, bless you. And that's by working the steps. It's like everything is because of the steps for me. And praying, you know, my sponsor always asks, like, ask God to remove this. And I think that's what I've done. You're welcome. So the question is, how has my relationship changed with my higher power through the years and church camp and everything? Sometimes I still think of God as the God in the sky, and sometimes I don't. And I have no clear definition of that, or explanation, I should say. But it is probably the question that I struggle most to answer, because for me, it's just a feeling. And I think it's like, how did I feel at peace ending early? I just did. It just came over me. That's just being connected to God. And I didn't have that when I came in. And when I came in, I realized that the God that I grew up with wasn't everyone's God, and that gave me a lot of peace. And so I think my relationship has strengthened over the years, because I'm not so focused on one God, if that makes sense. Because I was raised with one God, and that was it. And that's just not how it is anymore, I believe. It's anything. And for me, it's just a feeling and willingness to just get on my knees and turn it over. So, thanks. Okay, so the question is the steps, and have any been particularly hard or inspiring? Step four was just amazing. It was hard, don't get me wrong. But, I mean, I did a thorough inventory, and, like, I listed stuff. And I got to turn that over to someone, and for someone to say, yeah, me too, okay, next page, keep going, you know? And also for her to say, you never have to do that again, you know? I really felt like that's when I got my voice. And I was probably about a year and a half into program when I had finished that. I was really scared to do the four step, because a lot of people in the rooms had said, oh, that's when you're going to lose weight. And I was like, what? No. Like, I held on to my fat for a reason. I ate to protect myself. I wanted to keep you away and, you know, for me to suffer. And so I was terrified to do it for that reason. But that wasn't the case for me. And then, I don't want to talk about this, but I can't lie, I didn't overeat just alone in this meeting. Step eight was really powerful for me, because I started it. It's forgiveness. And in my recovery, I had had an affair with someone, and it consumed me. And I got to step eight, and my sponsor was out of town, and I had a temporary sponsor, and I called her and I said, I don't know what to do to forgive myself for my behavior, and I don't like myself anymore. Like, what happened to me? And she told me to write a letter to his wife, and I would not give it to her. But I did, and that was the first step in forgiving myself. And I learned that, like, I cannot forgive myself. I cannot forgive you if I do not forgive me. And I felt horrible, you know, but feeling horrible, like, that's, what's that going to do? You know, I had to take action. And now my amends is volunteering at a women and children shelter for the harm I've done to people that don't know that, you know, they've been wronged. So 4 and 8 were really powerful for me, and just forgiveness of myself, you know, and then making amends for, like, things I've done in recovery and things I've done in my compulsive eating, because I've hurt people in both, and I just get to, like, keep turning that over. So thanks for your question. What's my abstinence? So it's no binging, no pizza. I don't go to multiple places, and I don't leave the house after 10 o'clock for any sexy food, because that's what I did in the beginning. And it hasn't, my abstinence hasn't changed. And I don't eat my red light foods, but they're not part of my abstinence. It was just really loose in the beginning with my sponsor. But my food has definitely cleaned up, which, you know, is more part of the food plan for me. And I thought about changing or, like, adding to my abstinence. I just haven't. But I'm really clear that certain foods I cannot touch or pick up. They're just not for me. And so I don't eat them. And I've thought about, you know, working with my sponsor and asking if I should add it to my abstinence. We just haven't yet. But I'm really clear one day at a time what I cannot touch. And I think I have a healthy level of, like, fear of what it would be like. Because I don't, one of my best friends in program, like, took a bite and went out for 22 years. Like, I don't, what if that's me? You know, I just cannot touch certain things. So, thank you. So, when did I start sponsoring and what was it like? I started sponsoring after my fifth, at the very end of my fourth step, like right around my fifth step. And everyone's different. That's what my sponsor told me to do. And it was absolutely terrifying. You know, I never felt like I was good enough or that I had enough to say or share. I felt like sometimes I didn't even want to do it, you know. But now, I mean, I learned so much from them. I can't imagine, you know, life without, you know, not, I can't imagine, not like so dramatic, but like, it helps me, you know. And I had the sponsor over today, and, like, literally all of them are supposed to be here, and, like, something happened to every single one of them. Like, it was just one of those days. And I have, you know, guidelines. You know, like, I ask them to do these certain things and really encourage them to do it. And when they don't, you know, it's, you know, I'm so abstinent. And I can't make them do anything. I can just give them suggestions and love them through it, and give them hard direction when they need it. So, thanks. Okay, so the question is, how do you juggle two programs, and has it ever put OA at risk? Am I abstinence at risk? Yeah, that's why I went to the other program. Like, abstinence is everything to me. And I, when I started having food thoughts and I started thinking more about food and, like, wanting to mix things and move things around, you know, 4 years in, so I'm almost 8 months in that program, the other program, my other program, and I was willing to put it down because I didn't want to mess with my abstinence, absolutely. So that's why I went, you know. And I do 3 meetings in each program to balance it. So, and if I go to, like, a 4th meeting in one program, then I go to a 4th meeting in the other program because I got to keep them, like, balanced and equal. And I think that was for me because I was like, I'm not really the other thing. You know, like, I'm fine. And I am, you know. And they're both, like, when I went in, I didn't think it was life or death. I didn't think I was that bad, but it is in certain areas, and always life or death, so they have to be equal. So thanks. Awesome. Thank you.